Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1989 movie She-Devil, starring Meryl Streep and Roseanne Barr. Is this on your list? Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about the 1992 movie Death Becomes Her, starring Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn.
We're going to talk about this movie first?
Yeah, let's talk about this movie first. Because later on, we'll talk about the movie The Love Guru in much less detail, but maybe with more anger. At least from one half of it.
Okay.
So, Brother Jay, is this on your list?
It was on my list, yes.
Okay, so introduce us to the Robert Zemeckis film, Death Becomes Her.
I am positive this was a, I know I saw it in the movie theaters. 92 would have been a year and a half, 2 years after I graduated high school. So I would have no longer been working at the theater, but I would have been, this would have been my movie going period. So I remember being funny. Considering the type of movie it was, because it had some kind of strange darkness to it, but I remember chuckling at it. I haven't seen it since then, but I had fond memories of it. So
I don't know if I saw it. Maybe I saw it in the theater with you, actually, but I started watching it this week and I realized, oh, this wasn't a movie that was known because it was especially good, although I thought it was fine, but this is a special effects movie. This was the movie before Jurassic Park that Industrial Light and Magic made.
It had a lot of effects that don't transcend high definition televisions.
No, definitely not. I mean, it's right now you would see the same level of effects on America's Funniest Video, where they put Tom Bergeron's face on, the people that are getting whacked in the nuts with wiffle bats. It's
the worst sentence ever.
As an example.
Do you watch a lot of those videos?
It turns out we do. Journey loves them. It's something innocuous. Stupid human tricks are fun.
Okay.
So 1992, Robert Zemeckis, you know, of course, he's the director of Romancing the Stone, Back to the Future, all of them, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Forrest Gump, Contact, Castaway.
Yeah.
He makes family movies, right? I mean, pretty much fun for the family movies?
Seemingly. I mean, I don't know if that's on purpose or is just how it works out. This wasn't really a family-friendly movie, though. Adultery, murder.
Yeah, but it wasn't, like, R-rated, I don't think.
This was a dark movie, though.
A little bit. And, okay, maybe you realize this, but I didn't realize this until I looked in the notes. But this is something of like a cult classic in the gay community.
Oh, I had no idea.
Well, maybe it's because it's the subset of the gay community that is that does the
prancing around.
No, it's the drag queens. There are drag queen characters based on Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn. There, in fact, a whole episode of the last season of RuPaul's Drag Race revolved around this movie.
Oh, all right. Well, I had no idea.
Because it's super campy, this movie.
It's over the top, too.
Oh, definitely. This is also an Oscar-winning movie.
Oh, I had no idea.
For special effects.
Oh, well, very good. Probably well-deserved in 92.
And this movie, the three stars are heavy hitters.
Yeah.
We have two Oscar winners.
Well.
Multiple Oscar winners, actually.
Actually, There's four heavy hitters because Isabella Rossellini.
Indeed.
Which as soon as I heard her voice, I just had an ethereal grin because I love her. So.
Oh, me too. Probably for slightly different reasons.
I would imagine.
Although she's one of the Lynch weirdos too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love her because, you know, Wild at Heart. So.
Yeah.
But also she did those weird.
Pretty to Durango.
Those weird sex videos.
Those weird sex videos?
You don't know what I'm talking about, do you? I will get you some links.
Is it green porn?
I don't know what that means.
she has a series maybe called Green Porn or Green Porno.
That sounds right.
Yeah. You can send me, by the way, to listeners, you can send any kind of Isabella Rossellini sex videos to Eric at Not in a Creepy Way. If you mark it NSFW, that might help me a little bit, but you know, like, I don't think sensitive eyes will be opening these emails. So
she had like the sex life of a fly.
That's it. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, have you seen those?
I haven't, but I saw on her IMDb that she plays like male blue whale or something. And
they're amazing. Bad news for you. She's clothed. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, I'm, you know, I'm a lot older than I was then. And besides, I don't want to watch animal sex videos. Don't send any of those to me.
Oh, God.
So, okay. Let's just dive right in.
This could easily have been a much scarier horror movie.
Oh, sure. First of all, the movie starts in 1978, where we see a narcissistic, manipulative actress, Madeline Ashton, played by Meryl Streep, who we know from Silkwood, adaptation, 2004's Manchurian Candidate.
Are those the only Streep films we've done?
I think so. We haven't even done adaptation yet, but we need to.
That's embarrassing.
Well, she's got a lot of, like, I mean, I don't want to watch Sophie's Choice. I don't want to watch Dingoes Ate My Baby, although that's an interesting story. I haven't seen the movie. Maybe it's a great movie. I don't know.
Postcards from the Edge.
Yeah. We're going to talk a little after this is over. I have a whole section on Meryl Streep that we're going to talk about, I hope. But she's performing in an awful musical version of Sweet Bird of Youth on Broadway, which is already kind of, you can see what kind of movie this is.
Yeah.
Because it is crazy over the top. And in the audience is her longtime rival, Helen Sharp, played by Goldie Hawn, who is an aspiring writer. And she takes, Goldie Hawn takes her fiance, plastic surgeon Ernest Menville, Bruce Willis. And we know Bruce Willis from Die Hard, The Last Boy Scout, 12 Monkeys, The Fifth Element, and Looper. Also, why haven't we talked about The Sixth Sense already?
We've mentioned it.
Oh, no,
I think because I don't know. Are you wishing to review it?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, at some point, aren't we going to talk about Pulp Fiction and The Sixth Sense? Because we haven't gotten those yet. Both of them are Bruce Willis movies.
Yeah, that's true. Granted,
this whole podcast started with The Electric Grandmother, so it's not like we've been aimed at the at the heavy hitters all along.
Our trajectory isn't linear.
No, not at all.
As
Anthony Rotolo from TV Terror and many other things suggests, we have an eclectic selection process.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's nearly random.
So Ernest, Bruce Willis, is smitten with Madeline, and he ends up breaking off his engagement with Helen to marry Madeline. And then we go 7 years later in 1985, and we see Helen, who is inside her apartment with a bunch of cats eating frosting out of a can.
It's my spirit animal right there.
Yeah, I mean, so she is depressed and fixated on Madeline.
Oh, I should digress. I should interrupt early on. So when the over-the-top play was going, sorry, I just got a very strange text message. You're dead to me. Well, okay then. random things for a thousand, Alex. When the over-the-top play was...
wait, that's not from Mom, is it?
No. Okay. I actually think it's spam mail.
Ah.
The crazy over-the-top play, I wrote down, worst play ever, and then I wrote, we need to watch Death Trap.
Absolutely, yes. Put that on the list.
I don't know why that sprang to mind. I don't know if that's a good equivalency, but, you know.
Yeah, well, no, we should. Absolutely. We could watch Street Smart, too.
I don't know. Street Smart?
That's with Christopher Reeve and Morgan Freeman, where Morgan Freeman plays a pimp. Christopher Reeve plays a journalist, I think.
I've never seen that.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know if it holds up, but it's interesting. It's Morgan Freeman right off of like Easy Reader.
Electric Company.
And he's pimp-tastic.
I almost wish I could find a box set of Electric Company, but I fear watching it would drive me insane.
Well, maybe. Okay, 7 years later, of course, Helen ends up...
Frosting out of the can.
The police come to take her away, and she goes into a mental institution.
Also, vanilla frosting, not the frosting I would be binging on.
But she had a whole cabinet full of cans of frosting, so...
Yeah, but again, vanilla, not my go-to.
That's just a sorbet between your fudge frostings and your maybe German chocolate cake.
I see German chocolate cake, you've got the rainbow frosting, you've got the strawberry frosting, you've got the lemon frosting. I mean, you have so many choices, but just vanilla.
You've got lemon frosting in the morning for like, that's a breakfast frosting, kind of a brunch frosting. And then you have the German chocolate cake is more of a dinner frosting.
Oh, I see. I didn't know the protocol, but I'll make sure when I'm in my crazy cat lady hoarding days that's the list.
I can actually like taste frosting in a can right now, that fake chocolatey flavor.
That's so good, though.
I don't know if good is the word, but it's something. It definitely brings back a sense memory.
One of my guilty pleasures is just, you know, chocolate frosting on graham crackers.
That's true. Yeah, that is actually a staple.
Yeah, it's one of those things that boyfriend Jesse, the first time I gave him one, it blew his mind. He was like, why haven't I ever done this before? I'm like, I don't know. I've been doing it since I was like 5 years old.
Yeah.
Mainlining sugar. So anyway.
Yeah, in between brown sugar sandwiches.
Hey, those are awesome too.
And healthy breakfasts of peanut butter cookies and milk, if you're in a pinch.
Oh, I never did that.
That was the maybe an oatmeal cookie would also qualify as health food. Never a chocolate chip cookie. It'd be like it would be unheard of to eat a chocolate chip cookie for breakfast. But if we had to hustle out the door, here, eat a peanut butter cookie. It's almost healthy. This body was not built in a day, let me tell you. Not blaming my mother. I'm just saying that, anyway. So
now I'm part of that club.
We skip ahead another 7 years.
I wrote 0 to 7, regular to fat, 7 to 14, revenge in process.
Ah, yes, we have
14, fabulous.
We have, in 1992, Madeline lives in Beverly Hills with Ernest, but they are now miserable. Is she Madeline or Madeline?
I don't know. Wygant.
Exactly. So Madeline's acting career, I think it's probably Madeline. Madeline's acting career has faded with age, and Ernest is an alcoholic reduced to working as a reconstructive mortician. By the way, this is an interesting time for Bruce Willis because he's trying to do all sorts of things here. I thought, well, I wonder if this is like between Moonlighting and like Die Hard. Oh, no, this is after Die Hard, and he was already, you know, an action star. So this is like weird with the strange toupee and really schlubbing it up for this role.
Yeah, but it was the opportunity to be wedged between Goldie Hawn and Meryl Streep, which at that time was probably a pretty hot ticket.
Okay, I had also forgotten, I think I underestimate Goldie Hawn, her acting ability. She's won 2 Oscars. She is like a pretty great actress. And this movie
Meryl
is not
Streep's
necessarily...
no slouch.
Oh no, well, we're going to talk about her later, remember?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say. So, credit where credit's due.
Oh, yeah, no.
Meryl Streep. Goldie Hawn's done tons of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Although she's also done some just absolute dreck. Overboard.
She actually hasn't... Well, people love Overboard.
I know they do.
Yeah. But, you know, again, that has the Kurt Russell factor, too. I was recommended a movie by a woman I work with, Foul Play. It's the Goldie Hawn Chevy Chase movie.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah. It's supposed to be funny. We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah. Chevy Chase is one of those things, one of those actors that it's like, I don't think I've ever liked him. I mean, he's been funny in some stuff, but maybe it's just because I know too much about his personal, like, he's not nice to people.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever really liked him outside of Saturday Night Live.
And even then.
Yeah, that's, I was going to say it was very, very episodic.
And he wasn't even on Saturday Night Live very long, right? I mean.
No, one season, I think.
So, he was too good for that.
And that his ill-fated talk show. So I'm not a big Chevy Chase fan.
Now, hold on. Was his ill-fated talk show where we met Henry Rollins for the first time, or was that Dennis Miller?
That was Dennis Miller.
Oh, okay. Anywho, 1992. Madeline and Ernest are miserable, and they receive an invitation to a party celebrating Helen's new book. And Madeline rushes to a spa where she regularly receives facial treatments, and the spa owner tells her to contact this specialist by the name of Liesl von Rumen, Isabella Rossellini, who we know from Wild at Heart. That's all we know her from, because we haven't done Blue Velvet yet. So Madeline is like, I'm good, and instead attends the party and discovers that Helen is now slim, youthful, and beautiful. And she is dumbfounded and depressed by Helen's appearance, and they are very catty with one another, which is, again, I think what makes the movie like a campy, over-the-top drag queen hit.
It's very Dynasty-esque.
Yes. So, Madeline is depressed, so she visits her younger lover, but he's already sleeping with a woman his own age. And so she's dejected and ends up driving to Liesl's home. And Liesl is a mysterious, glamorous, wealthy socialite claiming to be 71, but she don't look 71. She reveals the secret of her beauty and youth, an expensive potion that promises eternal life and everlasting youthful appearance. Madeline purchases and drinks the potion and is rejuvenated, regaining her beauty. This is where all of the crazy
special effects
start.
Yeah.
So, as a condition of purchase, she must disappear from public life after 10 years to keep the existence of the potion secret. And also, Liesl warns Madeline to take good care of her body. Helen, in the meantime, seduces Ernest and convinces him to kill Madeline. And Madeline returns home, and she and Ernest argue, during which she falls down the stairs, breaking her neck. Now, this should have won an Academy Award for falling down the stairs. The stair falling in this movie is top notch. Those are marble stairs. It was great.
That wasn't really a person. Come on.
It looked really good, though.
It did. It did. No, it did.
Yeah. She breaks her neck as well as maybe, I don't know, her arms and a leg or whatever.
She is bent like a bad old pretzel.
Yes. So Ernest believes Madeline's dead and ends up calling Helen for advice.
Well, he calls Helen at confessing that he just killed her, which is what he thought he couldn't do, because they talked about killing her.
Yeah, well, also, Helen is like, did you not pay attention to all of my instructions about how to kill her? The idea was it to look like an accident. Pushing her down the stairs is not what she had in mind.
Yeah.
While he's having this conversation on the phone with Helen, Madeline, like, gets up and walks over to Ernest with her head on backwards, and he is freaked out. And he's assumed, the only way he could process it in his mind is to assume that she has a dislocated neck, which is a real thing. People have survived having dislocated necks. It's very, very rare, as you could imagine. So he takes her to the emergency room, and we meet an uncredited emergency room doctor, Sidney Pollack. I love Sidney Pollack. I mean, Eyes Wide Shut, sure, but he's so good in everything. So Sidney Pollack is not having a good time because as he's examining her, he's finding that she is technically dead.
He doesn't take that very well.
No, he actually has a heart attack and dies. Yeah. So Ernest ends up, he thinks this is a miracle resurrection and returns home with her and intends to use his skills as a mortician to repair her body. So Helen actually shows up at the house. So she ends up asking about Madeline's situation, and Madeline then overhears Helen and Ernest discussing the plot to kill her. And this is where Madeline shoots Helen with a shotgun, creating a big hole in her abdomen, which is actually pretty good looking.
Yeah.
I mean, again, convincing. For the time, it was fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing where just seeing scenery behind her was like a legitimate thrill at the theater.
Them throw objects through her body.
Oh, exactly. Sitting down. Yeah. Like in the, yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, it made me chuckle. So even after all this, even though I knew it was coming.
So Ernest is freaked the fuck out. But the ladies decide after they get done, you know, fighting, decide, oh, yeah, we both need him to repair us. So if nothing else, he can't escape them. They're teaming up now to keep him in their thrall. So they decide to, they need to bring Ernest to Liesel so that he can have the potion and therefore he can live as long as they do and just continue to do maintenance.
That way you can just pretty much blackmail him into maintaining them in perpetuity.
Yeah. So Ernest meets Liesel and she offers to give him the potion free of charge in exchange for his surgical skills, but he refuses to drink it when he considers the immortality problems and he ends up doing some comic fleeing, blah, 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 is trapped on the roof. He falls down because he realizes that they just want him to drink it for their own selfish reasons. So he drops the potion and then falls down, splashing through a glass ceiling into a pool. So he escapes. By the way, we have seen that in Liesel's place, she has a party full of people that have taken her potion.
Why?
Well, because they have to hang out with somebody, but they're not allowed to be in public.
I suppose.
But you caught all the references? Well, obviously Elvis and James Dean and Jim Morrison.
That was a running gag of who was really alive, but not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that.
And then we go ahead 37 more years. This movie is all about time shifts. And nothing will ever be the same.
They should have had a DeLorean and then, you know.
37 years later, Madeline and Helen attend Ernest's funeral, where he is
Wiegand.
Yes, they attend his funeral, where he is eulogized as having lived an adventurous and fulfilling life with a large family and lots of friends. Now, by the way, I realize that when I stop and reset, if I stop and reset and slow down and lower my voice, like to speak in a more regular tone, it's obvious where the edit points are because I'm not even the same tone as I am. I'm at the same frequencies. Anyway. So he's being eulogized at his funeral as having lived this adventurous and fulfilling life with all these family and friends. And in that way, he is immortal. They're in the back attending. And they, of course, are parodies of their former selves. They have cracked paint and putty. By the way, yeah, the way Ernest made corpses look so lifelike was just use spray paint. So yeah. They've been using spray paint and Bondo on themselves for 37 years. So they are like a bitchy couple now.
They do look a little rough.
Yes. And at the end, they fall down another set of stairs, cracking into several pieces. And as their disembodied heads totter toward each other, end up together. Helen sardonically asks Madeline, do you remember where you parked the car? The end. So, did you enjoy this movie?
I did.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think it's one of those things where if you catch it on TV, watch it. Yeah. It's going to be fine.
It's a cute movie. It's not a great movie, but it's a cute movie. And it's got people you like.
Sure.
And really, it doesn't have anybody you don't like, at least for me. So, you know, it's a C movie. It's not a great movie, but it's fine. It's one of those, like, it's not offensive. It's not, you know, there isn't a lot of swearing in it. There's not a lot of violence per se. But I can easily see this movie being either redone or being much rougher and darker and much more horror themed. Because this was kind of a dark themed movie.
Well, sure.
Yeah. You know, eternal damnation of the soul and whatnot.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, and is this a zombie movie?
A little bit.
Yeah. So, yeah. But it, unlike, say, even Back to the Future, it doesn't really have any, like, cringy, doesn't hold up to 2019 morality either.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, it's pretty innocuous.
Well, and there was no technology that was dating.
No, I mean, basically the special effects were the only thing that dated it as a movie at all. But like I said, I thought they were fine. Although yes, high def does this no good. There's no favors. High def does this no favors.
Right. That's definitely true.
Yeah. So here's my question. I was looking up. I was looking at Meryl Streep, and one of the things, one of the quotes attributed about her, not from her, but about her, is she is the greatest living actress. So I started to look around to see other lists of greatest living actresses, and I ended up in a weird hole. Not in a creepy way.
Okay.
So here is a list I patched together in no real particular order. Isabelle Huppert, is that how you pronounce her name?
I don't know. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, she is also widely seen as one of the greatest living actresses.
What would I know her from?
Let's see. What has she been in? I guess you will
she's
have to
so
look.
Great, I don't know who she is.
So let me go through the list as well. Okay. We got Meryl Streep, of course. Mm-hmm. Shirley MacLaine.
Is she?
She's still alive, I think.
Okay.
Diane Keaton.
Okay.
I mean, maybe her latest works are not her best, but, you know, and I haven't seen Annie Hall ever. I have it, but I've never seen it. So I don't know how it holds up. I have, of course, mixed feelings about Woody Allen. Julianne Moore. I think she's really good, but I don't think she's Meryl Streep good.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you.
Amy Adams. Same way.
Okay.
Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
Diane good. Lane.
Yeah.
Sandra Bullock. She's done a bunch of goofy stuff, but she has done stuff that's pretty serious too. Like The Blind Side was really good. Gravity was ostensibly really good. I haven't seen it.
28 Days.
She's good in everything. She makes everything she does better. But that doesn't make her the greatest living actress. So we'll move on.
Yeah.
Sally Field.
Sally Field. Yeah. She would agree with that.
Deserves to be on the list. How about Sigourney Weaver?
Yes.
Yeah. How about Kathy Bates?
Kathy Bates, yes. I can see that.
Viola Davis.
Yes.
How about Michelle Williams?
I guess.
I think Michelle Williams is as good as Amy Adams.
Yes. I think she's better than Amy Adams.
How about Dame Judi Dench?
How about Helen Mirren?
Helen Mirren is next on the list.
Oh, how did I know that was going to happen?
And then we have ones that I hadn't considered, but then I put them on the list because they were on other lists. Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
She doesn't act very much anymore, but she's really good when she has acted. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Chicopee. how about Emma Thompson? If you forget Dead Again.
Well, she was good in Dead Again. All the screaming.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah, scissors. And then someone you don't think about movies, but more of TV, but how about Allison Janney?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's awesome. Great in everything.
Yes.
And also overlooked because overshadowed by other things, but Bette Midler is considered to be one of the greater actresses.
Yeah. I think I wouldn't classify her as an actress as much as I would an entertainer, but I see that.
But when you think about it, you know, things like Beaches, didn't she win an Academy Award for Beaches?
Probably.
I think she's maybe in. Does she have an EGOT?
I don't even know what that means.
You don't know what EGOT is?
No.
Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony.
She doesn't have an Oscar.
She's definitely nominated.
Needs only an Oscar to complete her EGOT.
So who has an EGOT?
Who has won an EGOT?
Liza Minnelli?
Rita Moreno?
Yeah.
John Gielgud, Audrey Hepburn, Marvin Hamlisch. Mel Brooks, Mike Nichols, Whoopi Goldberg. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
John
one
Legend.
Woman show. I think one or Tony, right?
Oh, John Legend, Andrew Lloyd Webber, and Tim Rice.
I think Lin-Manuel Miranda is expected to get one when they make the Hamilton movie. Although, if he just has to write a song for a movie, I mean, he could have won. Did he write songs for Moana?
Let's see. Six other artists. Liza Minnelli, James Earl Jones, Barbara Streisand, Alan Menken, Harry Belafonte, Quincy Jones have also received all four awards, but at least one of the awards was non-competitive, i.e. special or honorary in nature.
Yes.
Streisand's Tony, both Jones's Oscars, Minnelli's Grammy, Menken's Emmy, and Belafonte's Oscar.
Okay. Got it. Like lifetime achievement stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, Helen Hayes.
Anyway, I just thought that was an interesting list. I'm sure we're missing somebody. But again, when you talk about the greatest living actresses, I mean, Meryl Streep is I mean, she's almost, it's almost like a cliche that she's the best actress ever. Like, she makes fun of it herself.
What about Annette Bening?
Yeah, she should be on the list.
Michael Douglas, Rabbit in the Pot. Glenn Close.
Glenn Close? Yeah.
You don't like, I mean, Glenn Close?
And she, I guess, you know, again, she's good, but is she one of the greatest? It's like Kathleen Turner. Kathleen Turner's been great in a bunch of stuff, but she's not Meryl Streep great. It's like the Judi Dench / Helen Mirren thing. Like, if you play in some, you have to be able to play all sorts of different kinds of roles. You need to be able to play, like, in a comedy and in a drama, like serious drama and like period pieces, the whole nine yards.
What about Natalie Portman?
Yeah, I think she should be up there. Yeah, if Amy Adams is on there, she should certainly be on there. Again, I'm not discounting Amy Adams. She's great.
I'm really ambivalent about her, but
she's got a pretty broad range, though.
All right. Joan Allen.
Yeah.
Let's see. Lily Tomlin still alive.
True.
Let's see. Holly Hunter still alive.
Well, what about like Vanessa Redgrave?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
I think the hard part is coming in where you parse what how you define greatest.
Exactly.
Because it's so relative.
Especially since we're talking about, you know, if you're, when you're talking about movie stars, you're also talking about, you are probably just like the movies that you like are probably like the music that you like. You probably have like a sweet spot in your history. Like when you're in your 20s or when you're in your teens, where you're more likely to vote for those. Because looking back on it, Smokey and the Bandit is a silly movie that has some good lines in it, but it's not like Sally Field isn't, she's just cute. There's nothing special about her performance or anything. Now, she's been great in other stuff. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Run, Forrest, run.
Well, I think also as time goes on, you know, it's, when you go back and rewatch an old movie that you haven't seen in 30 years, it was great at the time you watched it because you haven't seen as much that is good or better. But by the time 30 years has gone by, you've seen a lot of things. And, and although in comparison, they are worlds apart, when you say, well, okay, this movie's funny today, this other movie's not funny, but it was funny 30 years ago. It's just that you've seen everything else stolen or recycled since then.
And some stuff just doesn't hold up. Like, as much as I love Mel Brooks, Blazing Saddles, to me, does not hold up.
You could not make Blazing Saddles today.
Oh, no. Of course not. Well, maybe. Like Matt Stone and Trey Parker could make it. It would have to be that kind of movie.
It would have to be so over the top that it would just, yes.
Well, it would just be a bone. That's how Mel Brooks got away with it. That was way over the top back then. They knew what they were doing.
Oh, no. Yeah. He's a genius.
Yeah.
I like him quite a lot. I like Mel Brooks' movies.
Yeah. No, me too.
Even the terrible, awful ones are funny to me, so.
Well, he and Carl Reiner are just, they are some of the greatest living entertainers.
I would agree. Ever. I would agree with that.
And soon they won't be living, and that will be a shame.
Yes. Because
they are both genius comedians, and they still have it.
Yes. Well, Don Rickles, up until his death, still had it.
Yeah. Bob Newhart's looking kind of rough. I'm just saying.
Dick Cavett.
Yeah. Well, you know, but you know who else has it? Dick Van Dyke still has it.
Oh, God.
Like, have you seen the video?
I didn't even know he's still alive.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a video of him. It was a couple of years ago. But he has like a little singing group. And they were at like a Denny's.
Is it Dick Van Dyke and the Chimney Sweepers?
Well, no, but they ended up singing Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh,
like
Jesus,
just,
of course.
Just at this.
Just organically fell out of the table.
Yeah. And it's amazing. It's just,
maybe because that's what he can remember easily.
I think he's still got it. He's sharp.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not, but yeah.
Well, he did that Diagnosis Murder Forever.
Oh, he's done a ton of stuff.
Which I've never seen, but.
Oh, you better chitty bang bang, chitty bang bang, we love you, and in. pretty shitty bang bang, pretty shitty bang bang. What you do near, far, in a motor car, or what happy time to spend? Bang bang, shitty shitty bang bang, I'll find my friend, my friend. Bang bang, shitty shitty bang bang, I'll find my friend, my friend.
You're sleek as a thoroughbred, your seats are a feather
bed. We'll turn everybody's head today.
We'll glide on our motor trip with pride in our ownership, the envy of all we survey.
Oh, chitty, chitty, pretty, chitty, bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang. And chitty, chitty, pretty, chitty, bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang. What we'll do about near chitty, far chitty, and I'm on cut. What have time we'll spend? Bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang. I'll find for Fender friend. Bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang. I'll find for Fender. Chitty, chitty, bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang. Find for Fender, chitty, chitty, friend.
But, you know, what about Andy Griffith? Like, he lasted for a long time, being his charming self.
Yes.
Don Knotts worked forever.
Jeez. Oh, yes.
You don't like Don Knotts?
I'm not a huge Don Knotts fan.
Oh, bite your tongue.
I'm just saying. I don't know. Some of that, when you go back and rewatch it, is just rough. It's uncomfortable to watch. Like, wow, this is what I thought was good and funny, and now I know it wasn't.
Well, partly he's an awkward character. You know, he's the 98-pound weakling in a lot of stuff. Like Mr. Limpet, that's a weird movie. Anyway, okay, so back to Death Becomes Her, just to wrap this, put a pin in this one. So we can agree that it's a C movie.
Yeah.
But I would suggest that it was worth it watching it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's a perfectly enjoyable movie. I think you have to keep your expectations middle of the road. It's, you know, it's not out of Africa, but, you know, it's entertaining for an hour and 40.
I've never seen Out of Africa.
Oh,
is well, it good? Yeah, see me. Okay, so let's talk about the other movie that you watched this last week, mm-hmm. or a week before, because we skipped a week because I had pet problems at my house. We had a dog, or we have a dog. We still have our dog. Our dog Bella, turns out, has some serious heart issues. A week after one of our guinea pigs died, and like 4 or 5 days before the other one died. And my daughter's broken foot isn't healing right, so it's probably going to have surgery. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the Eric
and
household.
And her teeth.
Yeah, and her teeth, yes. She's having oral surgery on the 1st of November. So it's going to, where they're taking out all of her wisdom teeth, and one canine and attaching chains to two other canines to pull them
down.
That
sounds so archaic.
Oh, it's barbaric. So, oh well. But apparently it's state-of-the-art chain technology.
Chain technology.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's talk about The Love Guru. Not necessarily plot point by plot point, but we had talked about this movie because I said, hey, this is roundly considered one of the worst movies ever made, and I think that was an unfair characterization, because when I watched it a couple months ago, I thought it was perfectly fun. It was mostly goofy. It was a lot of dick jokes, but I thought Mike Myers is very charming, and Mariska Hargitay. So now that you were laughing at me describing it, so you were looking forward to it, which was probably part of the problem.
Yes, I suspect that my expectations were way too high. And now, I did not like this movie. There were a couple parts where I was like, the funniest part to me of this entire movie was the Morgan Freeman voiceover machine.
Yes.
That was the funniest thing to me. The rest of it was just like this nonstop a compendium of like dick, fart, and excrement jokes, which just gets old. And when I was going back in my mind and trying to recall the Austin Powers movies, I now fear that those are going to be awful on rewatch. I'm wondering if I have moved so far beyond in the realm of humor, but then I also have to remind myself, I still find Rat Race fucking hilarious. So, you know, I don't know. But this movie was hard because, first of all, that awful accent.
Well, okay, so
awful accent was just.
Was it racist? He's not playing an Indian man. He's playing an American man who grew up in India, or a Canadian man, or whatever, who grew up in India. Now, Ben Kingsley is playing an Indian.
Yeah.
With his Apu accent.
And the crazy cross eyes. And it was just like jokes that went on too long. And they weren't funny to begin with, so they beat the funny, they beat the unfunny to death. Also, the creepy, creepy Mike Myers head, adult head on the child body was really disturbing to me.
Yes, yes.
I was really, it was really kind of.
But what about.
It was icky.
What about all the Bollywood song and dance stuff? And is playing sitar to modern songs?
It didn't make me laugh, and the reason it didn't make me laugh is because I've seen funnier things on the internet that make parody fun of Bollywood stuff. For instance, if you look for Benny Lava, which like I think Buffalax on YouTube, if you search, I think Buffalax Benny Lava, which is a Bollywood like Indian music video. Which somebody has dubbed, that they haven't dubbed, they've subtitled it with English words that are nonsensical, but they're words that they try to make some lyrics that match the noises and phonetics that the Indians are singing, but instead are English words, which is hilarious. I'm not describing it in any kind of funny fashion, but it's hilarious. So that's hilarious to me. And there's a couple, three videos like that. And I can send you links to those because I've watched those repeatedly. And then a couple months ago, I heard on Pandora, somebody took it and remixed it. So it's just one of those funny things. So to me, it wasn't funny as much as it was just kind of like, wow, it was a bad stretch and not funny. So it was really hard to watch this. And it was really hard to watch John Oliver, who is also not really funny. Because yeah. He's normally super funny. And so this was like, what? Who wrote this? I suspect Mike Myers wrote a lot of this. So I don't know. And I like Mike Myers. So I Married an Axe Murderer. I liked it just fine.
Married an Axe Murderer was not a good movie.
I understand, but I thought that was better than this movie.
Woman. Whoa, man.
See, that makes me laugh.
Yeah. But Mariska Hargitay makes me laugh, too.
Yeah, it doesn't make me laugh. And also, it was like this strange who's who of people in the movie.
Yeah, like that was a lot, was of stunts.
Cameo stuff. Heavy.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know. I like the books too. I like all of his self-help books. We're sort of making fun of the Deepak Chopra guru help books.
Yeah, but the movie is unfortunately just one big bad cliche joke driven into the ground again and again and again. And I think had they moved on to better jokes or different jokes, I might have at least chuckled more. But it was just the same thing over and over again.
Well, there was nothing serious in this movie that made you care about the characters.
Oh, no. I didn't. You're right. I cared nothing about anybody.
Like, if there was a real, like, romance going on or a real, like, revelation that happened in either Guru Pitka or any of the other characters, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, like, the whole thing between the Hagia players was silly. And, again, you know, I'm sure this is all stuff that Mike Myers thinks is hilarious because he grew up with all this stuff.
Sure.
So,
and I suspect maybe if I was 20 or 30 years younger, maybe I would have found it absolutely hilarious, especially, you know, hey, they're making fun. Justin Timberlake has a giant dick and Celine Dion, which I'm like, okay, well, that's all right, but not funny to me. I don't know. I didn't connect with it in any kind of humor fashion. Boyfriend Jesse also despised it, so I don't feel quite so bad.
Can I point out that I'm not a Vern Troyer fan?
I don't know. He was at least a little funny. Oh, I didn't
he was
mean
a
that.
Little everything.
Oh, my God. That's so bad. Unintentional. I found him somewhat amusing.
Yeah,
so, well. But, yeah. There's not going to be a lot of sequels.
Yeah, I don't think so. So, you now, do you think this is a racist movie?
I don't know. It's because this is one of those things I was talking to I want to say coworker, but that can't be because I would never have discussed this at work. I was talking about some kind of discrimination and harassment, and I said, it's user defined. So, but also, because I was talking about microaggressions. Do you know about microaggressions?
Give me an example of a microaggression.
You have really pretty hair for a black girl.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's a microaggression. Although you get into that, you're starting to parse what the aggression is. And at some point, it's just plain aggression. You're just an asshole.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Microaggressions tend to be subtle and intent matters. So if somebody issues a microaggression, it may be because they're biased because of how they were raised. And they may not understand that it's coming across racist because they've learned the behavior.
Yeah, it's not offensive if it's just, you know.
Well, it's offensive because the person receiving it is offended by it.
Exactly. Yes.
But again, intent matters. So you have to go to the person and say, I understand you think that's a compliment, but it's actually really disparaging and insulting, and it hurts. It's painful. It's a painful statement. So please think about what you're saying and reframe it in a way that's more positive, or maybe just not say those things. And so that, because all of my employees have to go through microaggression training now. And so I said, I tell my workers, I'm like, intent matters. There are clients that are mean and rude. Their intent is not to be mean and rude to you. It's just that they're having such a difficult time in their lives that it spills out. So, you know, there's things that you shouldn't take personally. They're directing it towards you, or they're not necessarily directing it at you. No, that doesn't make it better. It doesn't make that a happy time, but that intent at least matters. So as far as this movie, there's a long way to go to this, but as far as this movie being racist, I see how it could have racist tones to it. I don't think its intent was to be racist.
Well, I mean, because, are you allowed to celebrate a culture that's not your own?
Well, that's a yes and no. We do that all the time. We misappropriate culture all the time, though, too.
Well, and, you know, I know that there have been lots of claims of cultural appropriation being wrong. But being an American, it's kind of tough because that's what we do.
Exactly.
We never had a culture. We Right. have appropriated all the ones we like and make it into something new. That's why we have Tex-Mex food that we call Mexican food, but people in Mexico don't call it Mexican food.
No, and wouldn't necessarily even recognize it as something they would want to eat.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I see Chinese food. And probably see also Indian food.
Well, Italian food.
True, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, the Italians would be horrified with what we call pizza.
Exactly.
There's a lot that. So, also, people will argue by paying tribute, they're actually paying tribute to those cultures, or they're trying to pay tribute.
Exactly.
You know, I'm trying to do this to honor the culture of these people, so I'm trying to approximate something which I think may be, you know, somehow part of their culture.
What about, you saw the Johnny Depp perfume ad lately?
No.
It's an ad where he's being Johnny Depp, but he kind of like looks like some sort of Native American mystic kind of guy. Like, I think he like digs a hole and buries a buffalo. I can't remember exactly what it was, but
good Lord,
yeah, the ad was considered to be culturally insensitive.
Oh,
but of course he played Tonto in The Lone Ranger.
Yeah, there's that.
So yeah, so, it's like, is that racially insensitive?
There's a whole like lasagna of debate here. There's just layer upon layer. Because here's the other thing. So if you cast characters, do you cast it? I mean, if you really want to be fair, you cast it blind, and you try and just pick the person who you think is the best person.
The Harriet Tubman movie is getting pushback because the lady who plays Harriet Tubman is a British actress. Well, Harriet Tubman wasn't enslaved because she was an American. Harriet Tubman was enslaved because she was black. That's what this other British actress has in common with her.
Yeah. Funny how that works.
Yeah. Is Scarlett Johansson playing in a movie based on a Japanese anime character? Is that racist?
Well, okay. Peter Sellers.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, Detective Mickey Rooney, Sidney Wang. Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds. So, also, again, different times, there were different people. You know, people didn't understand or weren't cognizant of the impact that they could have. Now we're more aware, hopefully, many of us, some of us at least, are a little more culturally aware, which has some impact. But also, again, when do I, you know, do I cast a movie deliberately if the person's supposed to be Asian, should I only interview Asian actors? Or if somebody's going to be a better actor, should I just be having actors and not assigning any kind of nationality? But then maybe it's a role that requires national. So where do you stop?
I mean, also, if you're telling a movie about Asian characters, if you're not Asian, should you even be directing the movie? Ha!
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, that's not a surname. I just mentioned that. That's an exclamation.
But also, you have to take into account that sometimes people who are outside of their own roles can actually do better jobs. In some ways, they try harder. They may be trying harder, or they may do more research. Not to say that they're necessarily better, I guess, that's the wrong term. But they may have some insight coming from a different perspective as opposed to someone who's lived that way. Again, I don't think that's better, but sometimes a different perspective can have a different performance.
Well, and if film is a storytelling medium, have you told the story well? That's the ultimate test, right?
Sure. But so here's the other thing. And this may be a really ham-handed comparison. So you have really dumb actors playing really smart people. Should you only have smart actors playing smart people?
Should you only have disabled people playing disabled people? Should you only have gay people playing gay people?
Who was it that just got really upset because there was in a wheelchair and they were upset because he wasn't actually disabled? It was recently. Oh, Bryan Cranston. That was it.
Oh, in the movie with Kevin Hart?
I haven't seen it, so
but he is in a wheelchair in a movie with Kevin Hart.
Yes.
Is that the movie we're talking about?
Yes, that's what I was referring to.
Yeah.
And people are all up in arms about that. So, oh, no, sorry, unfortunate phrase of. I'm batting 1,000 tonight. And I like Bryan Cranston, don't get me wrong.
Well, and, you know, I think method actors are weird, but there's only so much method you could do. You shouldn't have to paralyze yourself in order to be in a wheelchair. That's some Tropic Thunder crap.
Yeah. You're right. We appropriate culture all the time in this country because that's our culture. And how do you parse whether it's tribute or whether it's offensive? Again, I think it's intent. But knowing somebody's intent and assuming somebody's intent are very different.
And do you need an outside third party to judge? Because as the victim and as the suspect, are you both not objective about it?
Well, but also both may be valid.
Yeah. Again, it's very complicated. So
yeah, anyway. I know. These are reasons I'm glad I don't work in HR anymore.
Yeah. So, housekeeping. I mean, I kind of just gave my housekeeping in a 1 minute chunk is we got lots of stuff going on in my life, but yeah, nothing super bad and nothing super great.
I can tell you the saga of my new refrigerator.
Oh, please.
It's been a long going saga. So roommate Derek decided 8 or 9 years ago that because he flips houses and does new construction as well for houses, sometimes he gets appliances that are pulled out of houses that are being remodeled. Sometimes brand new appliances that the people that are buying the house just don't want because it doesn't fit their scheme or whatever, which is some entitled bullshit, but whatever. I'm not going to complain. But he got a stainless steel side-by-side GE refrigerator freezer with like water and ice in the door and all that business. And he was really thrilled about it. And he brings it home. And of course, it's too tall and too wide because where my current refrigerator resides is in a very small area between this tiny island and the back door And the Tyler Island is what separates the where the fridge and the oven are. So basically, it's this tiny little thin strip of counter that's maybe a foot wide where I can put like cookie sheets in the cupboard because that's all I can hold.
Yes. Stand it on the side.
Yeah, it's just barely. There's not a lot of space. So he had to put this full, and it's a huge side by side. So we put it in the basement because I don't have anywhere to put it upstairs in my kitchen. It wouldn't fit, and he was kind of cranky about that. But it is a nice fridge, and he didn't want to get rid of it. And we use it like leftovers go down there.
Is it hooked up to water? I mean, can you make ice?
We hooked it up to water. It makes ice. But I'm too lazy to go all the way downstairs to get ice, so I don't. But it's got a water filter, so if you want filtered cold water. But again, that's too far for me to go for. You know, I'm just too lazy. It's too American of me, you know. So Derek has joked for a long time, like, well, I'm going to get a fridge and I'm going to get it in there. I'm like, well, you can certainly get a fridge, but don't forget, it can't be tall and it can't be wide. Like, there's a very, very small footprint that you have available for this. So we already have this kind of big, shiny stainless steel refrigerator in the basement that's probably underutilized. It's got a lot of soda in it, but left over sometimes. And if I'm going to do some catering stuff or whatever, I'll prep all the stuff and it'll hold stuff. And if I'm going to do parties, it'll hold stuff for parties. So there's plenty of real estate.
Yeah.
Derek, a couple months ago, said, hey, I am going to come into possession of this 6-month-old stainless steel refrigerator freezer, which is a top-bottom, where the bottom is the freezer and the top is the fridge.
Yeah. Is it like and French doors on top?
Single door.
Ah, okay. Cool. So it's probably thinner.
And it doesn't take up as much space because of the radius of where you have to put it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't cut off as much area, I guess, is the way. Although the door is bigger. Anyway, so he brings it home and he's like, all right. And so he's well, we got to get the old fridge out and get the new fridge in. And I said, well, plug the new fridge in for a while first, because I don't have to put cold stuff in a warm fridge and have it cool down. That just seems like bad news. So he said, okay. And then a couple days goes by and I come home and he's in the kitchen and he has now cut cupboards off of the roof because the fridge was too tall, of course,
yes,
for the cupboards that were there. So he's cut off two cupboards, I guess it's probably only one cupboard, but it was like two doors.
Yeah.
And they weren't big. They're basically kind of what's over our parents' fridge now.
It's over the fridge cupboards.
Yes. Those are now gone, and he needed help moving the fridge. So, okay. So, and it is a larger fridge than we had, certainly. And it's pretty. It's stainless steel, and it matches everything else that we have. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just be zen with it. And he was like, you're going to be okay with this? I'm like, you already cut the cupboard. I'm like, what? That ship has sailed. Like, if I was not okay with it, it would have been before the Sawzall. So I'll be fine. I'm over it. Get the new fridge in. Have the old fridge sitting across from the new fridge. So I'm transferring all the food into the new fridge and get it all, it's all cold and all happy and whatever. We go to move the old fridge out and we can't because the new fridge is so wide we can't open the back door just wide enough to get the old fridge out. So then, and Derek's like, we are not moving the new fridge. It is too heavy and too big. We're not moving this. So he just takes the door off the hinges.
Nice.
So I'm like, oh, God. Now, all right. So I was like, okay. And so he says, all right, whatever. About a week and a half goes by, and I come out to the kitchen, and there is water all over the floor. And, of course, my first reaction is, well, that's odd. There's no water hooked up to the fridge because it doesn't have a water dispenser. So I don't know where the water is coming from. And the freezer itself, because I'm a big alcoholic, my upstairs freezer has never had food in it. It's only ever got bottles of booze in it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And bags of ice. So true to form, there was nothing in this freezer to have melted. I hadn't even put ice in it yet. So I'm like, what the hell? I don't understand. Why is there water all over the floor? Well, turns out the little design flaw of this freezer is that there's this little drain tube for condensate.
Yes.
That goes to the bottom underneath, and it gets clogged up super easy. And when it gets clogged up super easy, it just pees the water on the floor of the freezer, and then that eventually overflows out onto your floor.
Yes, yes.
So then we have to take the levelers off of the refrigerator, screw them down, pull the fridge out, go to the back of the fridge, and Derek's got to do surgery. So he's not happy, and he keeps complaining. He's like, I'm just going to buy a new fridge. And I said, we are not buying a new fridge. I'm not doing this again. The fridge is here to stay. Just be zen with it. Like, we just,
yeah, if you don't want to fix it. This is the second fridge we didn't need.
Yeah. I said, I'm not doing this again. So we'll be zen with it. And so he's pissily, angrily trying to fix it. And he gets it fixed. And we found a YouTube fix and blah, blah, blah. So that a couple weeks go by, and this is about 2.5 weeks ago. He says, what do you want for your birthday? And I said, I want the ice maker hooked up. That's really what I want.
To downstairs or to upstairs?
The upstairs.
Ah, okay.
Because it has an ice maker. It actually has an ice maker in it.
Huh.
But there's no water upstairs. So he's like, I would have to run a water line. I said, I understand. That's what I'm asking for. He goes, well, but I would. And I said, I understand. And if you don't want to do it, that's fine. But you asked me what I wanted, and that's like cheap and easy. He goes, well, it's neither cheap nor easy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I said, how much is it going to cost you? I said, you already have the tubing and you already have all the stuff. He goes, well, I guess that's true. I have all the stuff. So he's like, yeah, but I have to drill a hole. And I said, well, if you don't want to do it again, that's fine. I understand. If you don't want to put a hole in the floor, I get it. No big deal. He goes, no, I'll do it. So he drills the hole, he gets the water line run, hooks it up. Nothing happens. So we're trying to troubleshoot the ice maker. And this refrigerator is not even 6 months old. So I'm looking on YouTube, of course, for solutions. And they're like, well, you can take a paperclip if you have some insulated pliers and you can push into little points of the ice maker and you can make it do some self-tests to see that it works. Just don't touch the paperclip because it'll shock you, right? Because you're basically contacting different contacts in the circuit board. So we figure out that the water works just fine. It pumps water in, but it won't do anything else. So something in the ice maker isn't working. And the circuit board's either fried, it got left too long without water and having ever been run. Perhaps because it was probably never hooked up ever. It probably should have been unplugged, but it's been plugged into power the entire time. So it probably just burned its guts out for no good reason.
Is this something you can just pop right out and put a new one in?
Basically. And so we found a replacement on Amazon for like $35, which included everything.
Yeah.
And we swapped it out. And Derek's like, well, of course it will take like 24 hours before it will even start making ice. Because the whole thing has to come down to like, it says 10 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
Like it has to be internally 10 degrees in the ice maker before it even starts. So we have it in the freezer probably about a half an hour, 45 minutes. And we hear the water go off. And so it starts making ice. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, we have a brand new ice maker. I'm so happy. I'm so thrilled. I feel like an adult. I get to have real ice cubes. And I don't have to worry about falling down the stairs drunk to get ice for my drinks or whatever. So not that that was a worry, but, so we go to bed that night, and then about every 25 to 30 minutes, Griffin starts barking as the ice falls from the machine into the tray.
Cause we know from Drew that ice makers make noise.
Yes. So, and I was like, Griffin, it's just ice cubes. Go back to bed. But he's like, he growls and barks cause he's like, something in the house made a noise. So like, oh my God, really? So we're having to integrate the dog and the ice machine together. But, and then tonight I discovered that when the ice tray is full, because it's the bottom mount, when I pull the drawer to get ice out, there's too much ice in it, and it hits the cap of the actual head unit and just shoots ice into all the way into the back of the freezer underneath the drawer.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, oh, damn it.
Then you got to clean that out, because otherwise then you can't shove it back in.
Yeah. So I'm like, man, these are first world problems.
They are, for sure. But still.
But luckily, you know, I have nice, tasty ice. So I couldn't be happier. Early birthday present for me.
Yeah.
So thank you, roommate Derek. He doesn't really listen, so
that's okay. But we appreciate it.
I'll play it for him.
Yeah. No, Derek's a good guy. We appreciate Derek.
See, there's ice right there.
Beautiful.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we gon' leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we gon' leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow. And maybe ramble, that's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.